Welcome to Social Justice Matters, a podcast from Social Justice Ireland. I'm Colette Bennett. Today, the 8th of April 2020, is International Traveller and Roma Day. In this episode, which is episode 8 of our interview series, I chat remotely with Bernard Joyce, Director of the Irish Traveller Movement, about issues affecting the traveller community, the impact of COVID-19, and about the importance of community, all communities, coming together.
So Colette, look, thank you very much for inviting me to this podcast on International Roma Travel Day. And you'll probably notice, I apologize for the background, I am working remotely. So it is a challenge in the terms of this crisis. So balancing that with the directors, the role of the Irish Movement, and then the balance of having a family with six children and a baby. But I do think it's important in terms of recognising the Traveller Roma Day in the context of Irish travellers and Roma living in Ireland. So maybe we can start then. Travellers and Roma really have been a long visible in Europe and world history through mainly a narrative of racism and exclusion. So this day really should reflect historical context of travellers and Roma and highlight the level of injustice, inequality, and also in terms of highlighting the contribution that travellers and Roma make in all aspects of Irish life. So it is really an important day in terms of showing solidarity, but also in terms of championing human rights and towards supporting and highlighting, the issues that underpin our community. So I just want to say that to kick off.
Absolutely. And again, thank you very, very much for agreeing to do this. I know you're rushed off your feet anyway, and the current pandemic is only making it worse. And then six kids and a baby, I can't even imagine. Really, absolutely, I appreciate your time on this. And, you know, talking about the issues that are experienced by travellers anyway, and I was just kind of looking through some of the information that's out there, both from yourselves and from other groups that are working with the travelling community. And there was a survey there in 2017, the National Traveller Community Survey. And what they highlighted were three really key areas. One was health, one was accommodation, and the other was unemployment. So before we start talking about what's happening right now, do you want to talk kind of just, I suppose, even an overview of the issues concerning travellers before we even got to this point?
Well, I think before we even got into this crisis, COVID-19, I suppose the community have been always in a crisis in terms of their health, unemployment, education. And just to give an example, just in terms of traveller accommodation, I suppose there are 2,000 traveller families living in inadequate provision of accommodation. You have 591 families living on unauthorised sites. You have 892 people have no access to basic running water, toilet, electricity. And 1,483 people have no access to, at best, an outside tap and temporary toilets. So these are really stark, facts. And really, nobody in our society should be living in those type of conditions. So just to say, we've been campaigning and advocating very strongly in terms of the government and policy to ensure that every single traveller have adequate, safe, culturally appropriate accommodation in Ireland. In addition to that, when you look at the health stats, just for a lot of people out there, they wouldn't be aware that the life expectancy of an Irish traveller is 66 years of age, with traveller men living 15 years less than travel women, and travel women living 11 years less than their counterparts. The mortality rate within traveller communities is 3.5 times higher. Sadly, Colette, the suicide rate within traveller community is 11 times the national average. And we know all the studies that travellers are dying from causes as the general population, but they're dying of you know, for example, heart disease, cancer, respiratory disease, suicide, and it's far, far greater numbers across all ages.
Can I just ask you about the suicide rate, Bernard? Wasn't there a mental health coordinator or nine mental health coordinators allocated? Has that had any impact, or is it too early to say?
Well, that was a recent enough measure, so we really couldn't quantify, quantify in terms of, probably in terms of how that is impacting in terms of the work. But I would say, Claire, that's certainly welcome. Like that's a really welcome development in terms of resources at the national level and having coordinators across the country. And I think that's in the backdrop of a lot of, you know, campaign and work and highlighting this. It's a sad reality when young people within our community as young as 14 are taking their lives and as old as 50. And last year, after 30 members of our community took their lives. And I suppose what we want to do is make every effort to ensure that, you know, people have the supports, they have the advice, they have, you know, the services that are available to them. In order that, you know, they're getting the support that they need. But we also want to make sure that, you know, the other issues that compound this is, you know, in terms of lack of provision, accommodation, employment, education, all of those issues are really, really important as well. And I would say that, you know, if you have a community that's 80% of the community are unemployed, then that's going to impact in terms of, you know, poverty, that's going to impact your quality of life. So, I know, like these figures are so depressing, and from an outside perspective, but you can just imagine what it's like for the community, you know, when each and every person within the community knows somebody that's taken their life, and that's really, you know, a sad reflection of where the trauma community is. So we do want to see, you know, see steps that will be taken to support the community. We do want to see initiatives in terms of support better outcomes from education. That we want to see improvement in terms of traveller accommodation, that every person has a fundamental right to safe, adequate provision of accommodation. And really, there should not be anybody at this day and age without basic facilities. And in 2017, trans were recognised as, you know, for the first time by the state, as a minority ethnic group in Ireland. And I think that was really welcome, but it's very symbolic. So we have to see this, you know, really meaningful outcomes now in terms of going forward.
Absolutely. And I think that was one of the committee pieces last year in relation to making it more than just a symbol, I suppose, to actually looking at, well, have traveller experiences improved since 2017 when it was a formally recognised ethnicity? Can I ask you about the employment thing? Because obviously, I mean, and you're right, it's harrowing to hear the statistics on the mental health, and absolutely, you know, being part of the community, it must be personally very upsetting that you must know at least one, if not more, people that are affected. But you're right, this is part of a bigger issue. This is part of bigger supports that are needed. So the coordinators are one thing and very welcome, but there are other pieces in this jigsaw, I suppose. The employment issues, again, in looking at some of the information that yourselves have put out and others, there's a fair enough uptake in terms of training courses, but it's not translating into employment opportunities.
No. And the training that's currently within the sector and outside of it is not leading to real, tangible, you know, employment prospects. And I suppose it's trying to support people within a well-established, you know, system. But when you look at employment within the travel community, 80% of travelers are unemployed, Colette. But also the survey that you mentioned, 8 out of 10 employers said they wouldn't employ a traveller. So it curtails. And a lot of young people who would be looking for employment would find that you would have to you know, you'd have to hide your identity in order to access mainstream employment. And I think that is, that becomes very challenging when they're working in an environment where they can't be themselves. Yeah. The vast majority of travellers would find that, you know, a lot of travellers would find themselves working within the community sector, and would find that they're working with their own community. And I think they probably feel safer, they feel more confident, and they feel that, you know, that they can be themselves. Now, I think we have to shift that from that right across, where travellers are not feeling, you know, they're not being welcomed within all aspects of our society, and that includes employment. And, you know, we're seeing situations where even today, that when a funeral happens, hotels, bars, the whole town closes. And I think that's absolutely, you know, shocking to see that. And you'd ask, like, what other community in our society would that be acceptable with? And there is none. So I think society, we have a long way to go, and we have to still change attitudes and minds, but we also have to change policy to ensure that the treatment of the traveller community the travellers are protected, and that they have access to all services. So I am kind of, you know, I've seen that relatively quite recently where it's happening. So when you see people who, you know, at the saddest time in their life, where somebody like, you know, a grandmother, a daughter, a son, a brother, and they pass away, they'll go to, obviously, you know, a town. It could be, you know, Navan, it could be Kells. It's a long history there. But when you see a whole town shut down, and you know, children, mothers and parents who are grieving, they can't get, you know, a meal, and they're traveling long journeys. And I think that's shameful. You know, it's really shameful that that's happening still now. And it's morally wrong. It's wrong, and, you know, that one part of society are still not even excluded, but ostracized at such a level that people collectively work together for that, you know, to organize the closure of services.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think one of the things that's coming out at the moment is the fact that, you know, and we'll talk a bit more about what's happening now. But one of the things that's coming out is the very sad fact that for a lot of people, you know, whose family members have passed because of the virus, for example, they can't grieve collectively. And there's this whole discussion at the moment around how Irish people grieve and how we come together. And, you know, that is part of Irish culture, that we don't grieve on our own. We have the wake, we have, you know, the time afterwards. And it's, I suppose, it's something that travellers have been experiencing for a very long time in terms of what you talk about when communities are coming together to actively shut down services and supports.
Yeah, it's deliberate, it's well planned, organised, executed. And it's sending out a very strong message that, you know, that travellers are not welcomed in this town. But it's also sending out, you know, another message that, you know, that travellers are somehow to be, you know, this demonization of the community, that something's going to happen when it's not. So it is an issue of trust, but it's also an issue of better quality and basic, you know, fundamental rights. So I think that no other sector of society would, you know, that would be seen as completely unacceptable. So why is it seen as acceptable in terms of travellers? And with COVID-19, we're also in a situation now where our community are so close. You know, we are very strong, tied links as a community, as family. And now we're asked to, you know, cocoon, to separate, to social distance. And we're being asked to do all these aspects. And the message is going out very strongly to the community. But you're also being asked to do this in a situation where people still don't have basic water, sanitation, electricity, toilets, and overcrowding. So the onus has to be back to the state to ensure that people are given adequate facilities to during this critical time in terms of COVID-19.
Accommodation in terms of travellers, can I just ask you about that? Like that suffers from an unusual problem in the context of an overall housing crisis, in that the money is being allocated, but it's not being drawn down. So as of last November, only 14 of the 31 local authorities drew down their allocation. So you're talking 4 million out of a possible 13. Then, as you say, there's the overcrowding at a time when we need, and we're being told to distance and cocoon and self-isolate where there is symptoms. Can we talk a bit about, I suppose, the accommodation problems to start with, and then the impact of COVID-19?
So what you're looking at is that the accommodation, again, is that you have, you know, hundreds or thousands of individuals in situations where there's overcrowding. You have families who don't have basic water, sanitation, electricity. When people talk about a housing crisis, Colette, long before there was a housing crisis, travellers were in a crisis. And it's only recently that, you know, we've seen some legislation in 1998 being introduced to compel local authorities to provide adequate, safe provision of accommodation. The issue is not about the, you know, literally just some of the policies, it's about the implementation of the policies and about the political will at local level to ensure that accommodation is provided in each and every local authority area. That's not happening. So the budget that's there, it's not being drawn down. And again, even last year, a significant portion of the budget is not being drawn down by local authorities to address the accommodation needs of the traveller community. So it's in that context that you're looking at, you know, like accommodation crisis across, you know, right across the country. And you're looking at, you know, a stark figure of people living in overcrowded accommodation. And it's just, you know, and I gave you the figures there earlier on, but this compounds the crisis that we're in now. So you have like more than 2,000 traveller families in inadequate, safe, you know, unsafe accommodation. You have 590 families in unauthorised sites. You have 892 people have no running water, no toilets, no electricity. and these are just completely unacceptable at any time. You don't have to be in any crisis, but, you know, no part of society should be living without basic standards of accommodation. And I just think, you know, that is completely unacceptable.
Absolutely. I think, it was stark and it was highlighted there by Kitty Holland last week. I don't know if you saw it, where she was talking to residents of St. Dominic's Park in Darndale. And she was looking at the issues that they have. And it's exactly as you say, it's lack of water, it's lack of sanitation, it's overcrowded, it's poor accommodation anyway. And I'd imagine the same might be said of the likes of Labrie Park and other kind of, you know, termed unauthorised sites. Can you tell me more about the living situations there?
Well, what you're looking at is that some sites have been there literally for 40 years and there's not been any, you know, remedies to really improve travel accommodation. And in fact, I would say that in some areas, local authorities have actually, you know, cut traveler units of accommodation. So there's been a real push to, to push people into the private sector, like in terms of, you know, half long-term leasing into the private accommodation. But the result of that has left more people homeless, and families are left then, you know, at the mercy of landlords. But when you go into the accommodation, they're not, you know, the level of discrimination that they experience. A lot of landlords may not be aware of that themselves, and when they become aware, they start to make, you know, efforts to get them out and collect. So they then present to the, you know, the homeless services, and the homeless services themselves haven't got the facilities to cater because they're larger families. And you would have seen probably in previous years, travellers' families presenting to, you know, Garda stations. And, you know, so you're looking at that, and then that's in the midst of, you know, a crisis where even the basic emergency accommodation is not available. And I think it's just really hard, you know, extraordinary cases that people have talked about, and they've actually had to go publicly to explain that. And I think that, you know, it takes a lot of courage and a lot of gut to go out publicly to talk about your personal stories. And also, you know, for people who are homeless, there is a shame in that, and, you know, people feeling that, you know, that as a mother, as a father, as a couple, have I let my children down? And I don't think that's the type of society that we want. What we want to see is that very clear, tangible policies put in place to provide provision of accommodation, not only for travellers, but for everybody. But in terms of providing that accommodation, there's a need to have a home. And a home is not a commodity. It's not something that that it should be outpriced on. It's a home in terms of a need, a home in terms of as a right. And what we have been saying in the course of our Shadow Movement's work is that every person is entitled to that. When you have a home and you have a roof over your head, you have, you know, that's the start of, you know, in terms of what you can start in terms of, you know, moving in terms of the other areas like education, in terms of employment, in terms of, you know, in terms of looking, you know, building a sense of community.
That's your base. And, having a home is your base for everything else.
It's absolutely. So you can't really progress in any other areas. And I know that from on a personal level, when I was younger, living on the side of the road and outside Darrendale, we'd be evicted so many different times by the local authorities. And it's just, you know, it's just a really, you know, it stays with you literally for the remainder of your life. So it's, and when you're being, you know, evicted or moved without being offered any alternative accommodation, it says less about your value and what you're worth in society. So I suppose on a personal level, I want to kind of bring that experience into the work that I'm doing and to ensure that, you know, if we can change the way the government, you know, provide and deliver accommodation and bring our knowledge and expertise into that. And I think we've done that quite well. And just to say that while it all looks doom and gloom, and, you know, the stats and the figures and the funding, there was a commitment in terms of the minister in terms of the 32 recommendations from the independent expert report. And those recommendations and the Department of Travel Accommodation Unit are now progressing that. So I think it is a significant step, and we were just in the process of implementing that until the crisis. So what I'll be saying to people today, obviously, you know, because I think the audience are probably mainly non-travellers, but for the travellers who are listening, I would be saying to them is, look, we're doing everything we can, you know, to make so that you're safe, that you have the support that you need, and we're working at both a local and national level to ensure that, you know, the supports are in place. So we have, you know, we have seen a commitment from the local authorities to provide, you know, they provide remedies, but obviously we want to ensure that every traveller in Ireland is safe and has the facilities that are needed.
And hasn't there been a commitment by the department so that the local authorities would provide support at the moment in terms of extra toilets, running water, more mobile accommodation where there's overcrowding, extra rubbish collections, safe sites for emergency vehicles, access to sites for emergency vehicles and additional units for quarantining and a COVID-19 helpline. Is your own organisation engaged with the local authorities on those?
They are, Colette. So what we're kind of looking at is that it's really important now during this crisis that every traveller has adequate facilities and they feel safe. We want to ensure that, you know, that they must obviously contact the local authority or the local organisation work with the HSE, work with the local authority. There is a line there that people can contact in terms of the HSE.
Can I just give out that detail there? That line is open 7 days a week, and it's 083-100-6300. So 083-100-6300.
That's great. I think that's really important. And I know that, like, we're all in this together. And it's not, you know, while we're talking about travellers, I know that the reality is that people are dying. And we can see that in terms of numbers increasing. We can see it in terms of global. And it's important for all of us that we're in this together. And we want to get through this together as well. So it's not a situation where, you know, you have one community or two communities or three. I suppose we have to work and we all have to come together. And we also have to, you know, bring our humanity as people and as a nation to address the fight that we have. And our fight is against this COVID-19. And we want to work with everybody to ensure that we can pull through it. Obviously, want to commend the frontline services. I know that when we talk about frontline services, people automatically think, you know, in terms of the health services and the nurses and doctors, and have to pay contribute to them. But also have to say that, you know, to the young people who are working in the shops, and the supermarkets, and, you know, the drivers. And the people are keeping, you know, the posts, men or women, they're keeping our society going. So I really want to say a big thank you on behalf of the Irish Shoulder Movement and behalf of my community to them. And we want to, I suppose we feel very, very proud of those who are in the front line and what they're doing. I know that, and, you know, our young people in the travel community, they're postponing their parties, their birthday parties. They're stopping, you know, they're saying they're going alive and they're not meeting their grandparents. And, you know, and I know that's hard for all of us, but it can be also hard for young people as well, because they're tied, you know, they're tied behind doors and they're used to getting out. So it's a challenge. So I want to commend them as well. And, you know, and the sacrifices they're making. But I know that we can pull through it, and I know that we will get through it, and I know that we're saving lives. So you only to be a hero today, you just have to stay at home, you know. And that's if you stay at home, you can be saving somebody's life. And I think that's the message that we're trying to get out. I know it's tough and it's hard and challenging. And, you know, I've been literally cocooned in my own house for weeks at this stage. But I know that these are small sacrifices in terms of sacrifices that others have made, Colette. So I do feel very proud to be, you know, Irish. I feel very, very proud to be an Irish traveller. And I'm proud that, you know, that we are making the efforts that we, you know, that we are as a nation. And I just sincerely hope that, you know, our community will be provided with all the necessities that they need so that they can be safe, and we'll work with our community in order for that to happen.
And on that note, I think we'll end it there, Bernard, because I couldn't think of any better place to end it, actually. So thank you so, so much for all of that. And maybe when this crisis passes, we'll chat again about the next steps and the next thing that we need to do in terms of, as you say, building that society that we do all want to live in.
Okay. Thank you, Claire.
Thank you so much. Thanks a million.
Thank you for listening. That number again for the COVID-19 Traveller Helpline is 083-100-6300. Until next time, stay safe.